Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Michael Morris. Today we're going to be talking about accountability, we're going to be talking about getting the money to fix Joburg, and we're going to be talking about a journalist who has been harassed by the cops. So, you know, we were talking about what to discuss for the show today, and we had a number of options that we were considering, and we sort of decided to bundle a bunch of them together because there really is a common theme amongst these stories. So the first one, this is some remarks that President Ramaphosa made on Saturday, opening a special National Executive Committee meeting on local government that the ANC was hosting. And he made some comments there that prompted a response from the writers at Business Live, just talking about, you know, who exactly is the president talking to here. President Ramaphosa opened this NEC meeting by saying, he said that the ANC should be firm in holding local government representatives and officials, quote, to a much higher standard of performance and accountability. He said, quote, in the end, we must be firm about enforcing accountability and consequence management. The implementation of these processes must be adhered to strictly and result in engendering a culture of high performance for all of us. Where anyone is deployed or appointed abuses the people's resources through malfeasance or corruption, they must be removed from the roles they play. Where anybody deliberately does not execute tasks they are expected to execute in the interests of our people, they should know that they will be removed. This is the true meaning of accountability and consequence management. Another story in a sort of similar vein. I think this is at the same event. Ramaphosa has been rolling out the ANC's plan to, in preparations for the next local government election, have a, quote, older and more targeted plan to fix municipalities. They had a whole bunch of assembled ANC councillors swearing to uphold the values of this new plan when it is finalized and written out, the details of which are yet to be seen. And also on the accountability thing, there is a village outside Zanin where there have been 2 days of protests recently where people have been demanding the removal of their ward councillor. They say he's been neglecting the village and diverting development projects elsewhere. A person who was part of the protest said, there is no consistent water supply. Our tar roads are full of potholes and our gravel roads are almost impassable. They say they only have water a few days a month, and they get load reduction and electricity cuts twice a day from 5 to 7 in the morning and from 5 to 7 in the evening. They say they will keep protesting until the mayor comes here and addresses us in person. We are not moving. We do not want to be addressed by anyone else. My favorite detail in that story is that the media contacted the ward councillor for comment and was unable to reach him, which is perhaps not a great sign. So, Michael, you know, clearly there's a great demand out there for accountability. There's a lot of promises for accountability, but it's just so with lacking in credibility. When Ramaphosa goes and he gives a speech which says, yes, you know, people who are abusing resources or are not executing tasks should be removed, I mean, no one disagrees with that, but he's speaking almost as though he's an outside observer, not a leader of the country's most powerful centralized political party that has the power to remove most of these councillors. What do you make of this?
Yes, exactly. You know, there's this curious sense of a kind of disembodied voice in the South African conversation, saying they really should do X, Y, and Z. I immediately think of Paul Hoffman, who's written for us quite recently a great deal about corruption. So, you know, reminding us about the fact that we've had the Zondo Commission. How many millions were spent on that? I can't remember now. It sat for months and months and months. It's certainly more than a year. I can't even remember that either. And, you know, as Chief Justice or former Chief Justice Zondo himself has reminded us, so little, virtually nothing has come of all that work, all the investigation of evidence, all the findings, the recommendations. I think
there were some really good things in that report. It highlighted some of the problems. We agree with some aspects of that report wholeheartedly. We think it really tackled some of the issues. It was better than I expected. I thought it would be a lot more waffly, but actually it did get down to some of the core problems.
Exactly. So, you know, on the one hand, you know, the accountability aspect, the people who are actually named, have any of them been investigated or charged or become subject to investigation? No, very few. I think there were 5 out of 60 altogether, something of that sort of order. So, I mean, that's a staggering sum, and that speaks exactly to the story that you're referring to. And to, you know, 2025, the ANC has been in power since 1994. They're speaking as if they haven't had an opportunity until now to do all the things that they're now saying are absolutely vital. We've got to ensure accountability. We've got to have clean government. We've got to have people who are trustworthy. Well, you know, it's this is rather late in the day. And yet, on the other hand, of course, it is quite telling, I think, that clearly the message is beginning to get through. It's almost certainly too late for the ANC. I think the more astute figures have begun to appreciate that this is actually a little bit too late now. That, you know, they're right in the midst of the final crisis. But, you know, at least for the country, there's a sense that politicians are beginning to speak about what they have all been saying for all these decades. We want to be listened to. We want our services to be provided. We, you know, just pay attention. Do your jobs. We're paying you to do them. And you're not doing them. We can see you're not doing them. So, you know, get to work. And this is, you know, this has been the litany, or the kind of public litany for certainly since 2010. An awfully long time. And so on the one hand, you know, it's rather distressing that it's still the subject of fairly placid kind of debate and promises and so on. But on the other hand, I think it does actually represent, despite the kind of seeming placidity of the environment in which these things are said, I think there is a palpable sense of panic in the ruling party, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with that point, in the sense that, you know, when the public conversation is not even about the things that are actually wrong, you're in a much worse place. Even if the government doesn't look like it's going to change its behavior, even if the government is still kind of plodding ahead with the same things that got us into this mess, if they're not even willing to talk about the real problems, such as accountability, then you're not even beginning to get down the road. You haven't even stepped a foot on the path to solving the problem. I agree that there is a sort of sign here that with the ANC responding to, as you say, what people actually care about, you know, this is something that I think will appeal to a lot of people who are sympathetic to the ANC when they hear the president saying there must be accountability. Will those people give them another chance? Well, we'll have to see. But the indication so far, I think, is that some of them certainly won't. But, you know, this is, I guess, a baby step in the right direction. But what would be a lot better as a step in the right direction is if actual accountability was enforced. And, you know, exactly. I think this does need to be pointed out more and more. You know, the ANC is not some sort of super decentralized party where, well, at least in theory, it's not a super decentralized party where no one sort of controls things. They have this whole democratic centralism concept. The NEC decides to start kicking out councillors, and we've seen them do it before when councillors have voted for the wrong mayoral candidate or you know, haven't done what the party has wanted them to. They are out within a week. But you drive like a municipality into the ground, it's like, well, you know, whatever. And that there's the real problem that the president, I think, just can't seem to address. Because, you know, it would require admitting what has gone wrong up till now.
Exactly. I'm reminded actually of I think a number of pieces, but the recent piece that Terence Corrigan, our colleague, wrote on the Daily Friend, saying, you know, making this basic point. I think he was discussing the national dialogue, and you know, this whole idea of the public conversation about what matters. And he was saying, before you can deal with what's wrong, you've actually got to admit that. You know, admit what is wrong. You've got to confront that. And I think what we're seeing is not necessarily willingly. I don't think the ANC is doing this willingly. It's just having to do it because it's been brought, its nose is being dragged down to the hard facts of, you know, life on the ground. And so increasingly you hear this kind of rhetoric. We've got to fix ourselves. We've got to reform. We've got to renew. We've got to whatever it is.
All right, let's move on to our next story. Joburg Mayor Dado Marrero has gone through quite an evolution since becoming mayor of Joburg. He opened his mayoralship by announcing that you shouldn't expect much to change. Like, honestly, before the local government elections, don't get your hopes up. Which, shall we say, was not the right political approach to take in order to get Joburg citizens on side. And I think that the ANC is now beginning to panic about Joburg in particular, because it is the country's most important city, 16% of the country's GDP, 12% of its workforce. But it's got major problems, and it's in a level of crisis. This has been admitted as much now by Dado Marrero, who is now talking about actually tackling the city's biggest problems. When it comes to infrastructure, it has been estimated that the city of Joburg has to spend more than 200 billion rand on repairing infrastructure across the city, everything from water to electricity to roads, to get things just kind of up to standard. That's not building anything new. Dado Marrero says that currently they just really don't have nearly enough money. He said that the infrastructure landscape in Johannesburg has been meticulously analyzed, focusing primarily on critical areas such as water sanitation, electricity distribution, and roads and stormwater management. The city will strive to gradually increase the capex allocation each financial year to deal with the infrastructure backlog. That's the amount of money basically spent on building new stuff. He said, however, that raising the capex from 8 billion rand this year to 10 billion rand this year would be a, quote, drop in the ocean because of the huge backlog, that the city only has an annual budget of about 90 billion rand, a quarter of which goes to staff salaries, that at the current rate, if they're only spending 10 billion rand a year on capex and they did it perfectly, they would only deal with the backlog, never mind new projects, within 10 years. So Marrero says that he plans to raise 100 billion rand in the next 5 years. He says he's interacted with the CEOs of Standard Bank, African Bank, Development Bank of Southern Africa, and Nedbank, who he says have a special interest in the future of the city and have indicated their doors remain open for discussions about how to raise much needed capital for the metro. Now, I'm not an expert in municipal finance, but Michael, this seems rather far-fetched to raise 100 billion rand in 5 years to be entrusted to the same kind of mayoral team that has, you know, created the problem in the first place. Such enormous capex expenditures wouldn't be required if the city had been doing this kind of stuff bit by bit over the years. So now the reply from Marrero seems to be, whoops, we got us into this mess, but guys, trust us. If you give us 100 billion rand, this time it'll be fine. Never mind all of the misspending in city departments that we see at the moment within Marrero's own government. There are investigative reports that come out all the time about, you know, city power, you spent 1,000% markup on this widget and that cable. And it's just, once again, it just lacks credibility. What do you make of this?
I mean, we're in quite an interesting and precarious position in a way. I think of our boss, John Endres's address last week to the BizNews Investment Conference in Hermanus. It's a very interesting piece, and I highly recommend listeners and viewers who haven't seen it to go and have a look, published last Thursday afternoon on the Daily Friend. It's headlined, Real Transformation Hasn't Been Tried Yet. And John makes this point, sort of summing up the political circumstances in which we're all embroiled, whether we like it or not. He makes this kind of final point that you really need to read it. I can't really sum it all up now. But for all these reasons, I believe it is in the interest of South Africa that the ANC bend and survive rather than break and go under. So that's quite a provocative thing to say, a very interesting thing to say, a very interesting piece about, you know, how we move from where we are to where we want to be. Not in a way, not unlike how things were at the end of the 80s, where a lot of people in the ANC were saying, we've got to destroy Parliament, we've got to destroy the National Party government, we've got to build an entirely new thing. And in fact, what eventually happened was nothing like that at all. It was a transition from one to the other. So you had this continuation of the kind of legal authenticity of the process of the instruments and so on, and the one led into the other. And in a way, maybe that's where we are now. So we're looking at, you know, Johannesburg. I think whenever we chat, Nicholas, you and I, there's almost always a Johannesburg story, and it's a story about, you know, this kind of chronic situation that the major city of South Africa finds itself in. I think everybody agrees it remains the symbol of urban South Africa. We in the Cape, you and I both are in the Cape. Well, I've been here for a long time. I originally came from Kimberley, but you know, the Cape is a bit of an outlier. But it doesn't have the significance either economically or historically that the Gauteng does, and certainly Joburg is the economic powerhouse, central mining, and all the rest of it, and the place where so much politics really vigorously sort of emerged. You think of Soweto and so on. So it's Johannesburg, very significant. And as you say, you know, we're talking about an administration that a year ago, 2 years ago, would probably have been able to kind of dismiss some of the criticism that was being directed at it, or the questions being directed at it, which today cannot anymore. It cannot afford to avoid somehow addressing this thing. And the question then is, how plausible is it? I think in the story, there's a reference to City of Joburg's 200 billion plus repair bill. I mean, that's an astonishing sum of money. And as you said, Marera is now promising to build a fund of half of that. So that's not even going to meet the repair bill. You know, this is not, and this is excluding expansion. And this is a city that's attracting, I think, many more people than Cape Town does, and Cape Town attracts them. So people see Johannesburg as a place where they can find the better life and have, you know, maybe a hope of getting a job or a better school or whatever it might be. And if all you're looking at is the backlog, you still haven't got to, you know, what you've got to do for the next 10 years with the expansion of the population and the increase in needs and so on. So, yeah, I think it does highlight very sharply the other things we've discussed so far: accountability, how local government works, is it plausible, and the panic of the people who are incumbent, the incumbent powers, party, the ANC chiefly. How do we project to the public who we want to vote for us quite soon that we are actually trustworthy and that we can do this? So, yeah, I think a very good question.
You know, if Marrero, look, I'm pretty skeptical anything like this amount of money could be raised, because I think you'd have to be mad to be like a big bank and say, oh, we're going to give you this absolutely enormous pile of money, and you're just going to pinky promise us that it won't be spent badly. If Marrero actually wanted to get that kind of capital raising, I mean, also, all of these things kind of become a bit like, yeah, when you're in the lead up to an election, because you know that that's the main consideration. But taking on the theme from our first story, hold people in his own government to high levels of accountability. The evidence is quite a lot of it's out there in the public as for where investigations should be carried out, where there should be disciplinary processes. You know, you don't have to find someone criminally liable in order to enact a disciplinary process against them. It was a point our former colleague Sarah Gon would always make, or she's still a fellow of the Institute, but former podcast regular. And, you know, that would do far more to encourage people to maybe lend some money to the city if you actually held that accountability. But this is just a sort of a non-starter, and it's exactly something that any new government would have to bear in mind, is the credibility of the city's administration is going to be absolutely paramount for fixing things, because you're not going to be able to raise money, you're not going to be able to get public support if people just don't trust you to actually do what you're saying you're going to do. Otherwise, Joburg is not got a chance in hell of coming back together anytime soon. Okay, let's move on to the last story. Interesting little story from Ground Up, who often carry stories that don't necessarily make it to other parts of the media, or at least not in the same kind of detail. And I think this is something that to be considered. You know, there's what our laws say and what our big institutions are affected by when it comes to laws. You know, for example, in the realm of freedom of speech, in the realm of LGBT rights or whatever, you know, at a big corporate, the rules often end up in South Africa being quite different from people on the ground. And this is a great example. There's a freelance reporter from Ground Up, or who often works with Ground Up, Sandiso Pelaso. And he says that he has been repeatedly harassed by the cops while working in Nyanga. He, in the last 5 days, has been beaten up twice by the police and had his phone confiscated while taking photographs at crime scenes in the Nyanga area. So I think we've actually covered Nyanga last week. The area is currently undergoing a horrific wave of murders in Cape Town at the moment. So anyway, this journalist is out on the street and he's sees a shooting and he takes photos of it from behind the police cordon. And one of the cops says, "Hey, what are you doing? You're taking photos." And he says, "Yes, I'm taking photos because I'm a journalist." And they say, "No, you have to delete those photos. Switch your, give me your phone." So he says, "No." He switches off his phone. He puts it in his pocket. They then pull him into the, this is according to him and also to an eyewitness. He's pulled into the cordon area. They grab his phone and basically he gets beaten up. And eventually a local bystander says, hey, we know this guy. Leave him alone. Yeah, charge him and arrest him or leave him, let him go if he hasn't done anything." So the cops let him go. They say, "You can come get your phone from the police station later." Then when he shows up later to try and get his phone, he has to bring a license proving he's a reporter. When he shows them his press card, which doesn't have a photo on it, the police say, "No, this is not acceptable. This is fake. You're just making up." And then he has another incident where he sees some cops beating up some people and dismantling their bicycles. And he starts taking photos of them and a similar thing happens. So Michael, you know, like this is quite obviously just, you know, if all the details are true here, this is quite obviously not on. But there is something about kind of the more marginal parts of South Africa, the sort of the poorer areas, the more rural areas, some parts of the townships, where sometimes the rules just aren't followed at all. You know, if this had happened to, I don't know, like Mandy Wiener or something, you know, like this reporter from big publications, written books and stuff, it would be front page news for like weeks. But when it happens to a guy who's no one's name knows in Cape Town Township, it's kind of like, you know, that's the cop sometimes. What do you make of the story?
Yeah, I think that's a very important point to emphasize. And Steve Kretzmann is somebody I remember working with, and he used to occasionally write stuff for us at the Cape Argus, the Weekend Argus. I think this is very important kind of reporting. On the ground stuff, as you say, it doesn't involve anyone that really publicly known. But Sandiso Pelaso is somebody who actually does deserve attention because it does actually affect us. It is in our interest. It is important to us, and it's important to us. And I think probably partly because I very much doubt the cops would have had any kind of instruction to stop reporting or to. Public attention being given to what was happening. It's just an expression of the atmosphere in which policing increasingly occurs, and it's that atmosphere that exactly comes down from the very top. It's that the president himself, who is this disembodied voice, who is not taking control, not projecting a very strong message that goes downwards from the very top of the organization or the state all the way down to the bottom. You must behave according to the law. These are the rules. This is how you are, and so on. And in the absence of that, there is this vague sort of notion. I was trying to think of the words. A kind of atmosphere, almost, in which any kind of scrutiny is not welcome because it might reveal something we don't want the public to know about. And that is a huge problem.
General authoritarian culture of you need a license for this, you must get our permission for this, you can't say this, you have to do what we tell you regardless of what it is.
Exactly.
And, you know, unfortunately, for I think a lot of people, this is the reality that they live with on the ground. You know, you may have many rights on paper that aren't actually carried out in practice.
It's exactly that. It's exactly that, and I think that, that's why both Sandiso Peliso and Steve Kretzmann, who wrote the story for Ground Up, deserve credit for this. It's important. I think it's quite tough when you're down at the bottom, and nobody knows your name, and you are doing your job, and you're standing up to cops. There's nobody else around. There's no record. It's quite risky. It takes a lot of courage. So I think hats off to both of them, certainly. And yeah, you're absolutely right, Nicholas. It reflects the environment that we have now allowed to persist, and which needs to be pushed back or changed.
And once again, it comes back to that theme of accountability. If the details reported here are true, then the cops involved should be fired or suspended or punished in some way. That's, I think, a non-negotiable. This is unprofessional. This is ill-disciplined. This is illegal. But I think despite the story, despite any other attention it might get from other parts of the media, I highly doubt that. After all, that man, what was his name? Embarrassed, I can't remember. Collins Causer, I think it was, who's beaten to death during the COVID lockdowns, just for the crime, the not crime, but what was accused of being a crime of drinking a beer in his garden during lockdown by soldiers. No accountability for that. You've got to hold everyone accountable, not just at the top, but at the bottom too. Anyway,
Absolutely right.
seems like it should be obvious stuff, but apparently it's not, because we have to keep talking about these things. But anyway. Okay, thank you very much for listening today. We hope you found the show interesting. We will be back tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.